Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. 25 years ago this week, a white woman named Carol DeMady Stewart was murdered in Boston's Mission Hill neighborhood on her way home from a childbirth class at Brigham and Women's Hospital. The killing shocked the city. Her husband, Charles Stewart, claimed that an unidentified black man was responsible. Here's part of the 911 call from that day.
State Police Boston recorded an emergency 510.
My wife's been shot. I've been shot.
Where is this, sir?
I have no idea. I'm off. I'm just coming from Tremont, Brigham and Women's Hospital.
Where are you right now, sir? Can you indicate to me?
No, I don't know. He made us go to an abandoned area.
Okay, has your wife been shot as well?
Yes.
Local police responded aggressively. They searched homes in Mission Hill, they stopped and frisked black men and boys, and eventually they named a suspect, a young black man named Willie Bennett. But then the city learned the shocking truth the following January.
The killer was not a black man, but instead the white Charles Stewart, the husband of Carol DeMady Stewart. His brother Matthew identified him as the real killer, and then Charles Stewart jumped to his death off the Tobin Bridge.
The murder, the hoax, and the investigation consumed the city. It also opened old racial wounds in Boston. And it's on many people's minds again this 25th anniversary week. And Anthony, you covered this story 25 years ago for WBUR and for NPR. Would you describe the impact of the case in your view?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it was a terrible story, of course, on a couple of levels. First, there was the tragedy of the murder, the young and pregnant Carol DeMady Stewart. She was shot on her way home from a childbirth class. So there was that. But when the city learned that it was her white husband, Charles Stewart, and not a black man, it really unleashed a lot of soul searching and really touched a racial nerve. The police response was aggressive, and it seemed to many people that they were all too ready to believe a kind of a white suburban nightmare, that of course this crime was perpetrated by a black gunman, and it played into the worst kind of racial stereotypes, even though we know that incidents of black on white crime are in fact very rare. But I think also it was a lesson for reporters who were too easily led by unnamed police sources eager to solve the case. And in this case, the cops were eager to make the case that their original suspect, Willie Bennett, was the killer. And so they fed information to a local press that in some cases was a little too eager to buy it.
Well, Anthony, you mentioned sort of in general the lesson or the impact on reporters. What do you think it was particularly for you as a young journalist in Boston back then?
For me, you know, I think for a lot of journalists, I mean, I think it made me think about our own assumptions around race. I mean, how is it possible that this hoax was perpetrated by Stewart? And how is it possible that it seemed so believable for so long? And I think part of that answer is that too many journalists in the city were disconnected from the truth of what life was really like in parts of this city that we identified as black or minority neighborhoods. We covered these parts of the city almost as foreign lands, you know, places we'd go only when things went wrong. So when a white guy said, "Hey, a black man killed my wife," I think too many folks were willing to believe it. So for me, one of the enduring challenges in the wake of the Charles Stewart case is to do a better job covering the whole of our community. And I think that's a challenge that really remains to this day.
Another local reporter who's written about the Stewart case over the years is Boston Globe, now columnist Adrian Walker. And in Adrian's story, his column just today, he writes about what he calls its awful legacy. Adrian joins us now on the line from the Globe. Adrian, good to have you.
Good to be here.
And Adrian, you were at the paper in 1989, right? The year of the murder.
Yes, I was.
What do you remember about it and the effect it had on the city?
Well, I remember it much the way Anthony does. You know, it sort of unfolded in stages. I remember the shock and horror over the murder itself. I remember that fall, the unending questions about the investigation. You know, there was such certainty about who the suspect was, but there were never any charges. And after a while, that came to feel strange. And then, of course, it all unraveled after the morning shock. Charles Stewart jumped off the bridge.
Adrian, you talked a few years ago with Willie Bennett, the man wrongly blamed for the murder, and you mentioned in your column today that you tried to track him down again, couldn't locate him. But when you reached him some years ago, what was his perspective on this after that passing of time?
Well, it must be said that Willie has never been eager to talk about this. You know, he's always seen it, for obvious reasons, as a terrible turning point in his life. And he said that, you know, there was nothing to be gained for him by sort of reliving that terrible chapter in his life. He didn't really care to talk about it very much.
Seems like his family was more willing. You talked to some of them, too.
That's right. And in fact, I was standing in his sister's backyard when I got a hold of him on the phone. And yes, his family was more willing to talk about it. And how, you know, a lot of them still live in Mission Hill. And life has never been the same for them. You know, being a Bennett in Mission Hill took on a meaning then that it never had before.
Adrian, another thing you mentioned in your column today is that people always want lessons learned from this, but that you're not convinced there's at least not a consensus on lessons. If not a consensus, do you feel like for you there are some lessons in this?
Well, lesson number one for me, you know, and going back to what Anthony said, there were certainly lessons for the media, and we all got a lot of criticism, and we deserve some of it. I learned, you know, you've never asked enough questions, and to be more skeptical and to challenge the official version, and I don't think any of us would say that we did any of that enough.
Say we had some sort of repeat of the Stewart debacle today, a white person accusing an unidentified black person of a heinous crime. How do you think the police would respond? Would it be substantially different than it was for Stewart case in 1989?
Oh, I don't think there's any question that the police response would be substantially different. The department is more diverse, particularly at its upper ranks. But also, I guess, remember what the police response was like in 1989. And even then, many people thought it was over the top. You'd go to Mission Hill and watch them going through the housing projects there. And they were breaking doors down. I mean, that wouldn't happen now.
That you think they would press much harder on the person making the allegation before they started banging down doors?
They would press harder on the person making the allegations, and I just think the whole thing would be handled with more sensitivity. It was handled with no sensitivity at the time.
Adrian, when you think about the overall impact of the Stewart case on Boston, do you think of it more as a setback for race relations or maybe as an incident that made the city look hard at itself and do a necessary reexamination of its thinking and its attitudes?
It was a little of both, but at the time, this, without question, it was a real setback. It reinforced the image of Boston that busing had left, that Boston was this terribly racist city in which it was terrible to be a person of color. And, you know, it always made you a sort of suspect of some kind. It did prompt a really necessary examination of racial attitudes, as I wrote this morning. But that came slowly and over a period of time, over years.
Anthony used the expression foreign lands to describe how the media is often criticized for the way it covers communities like Dorchester, Roxbury, Mattapan. It's a common lament. You know, minority communities in Boston, especially heavily black communities, say the media only shows up for tragedies, for crimes, for negative stories. To what degree do you think the Boston media can still be legitimately faulted for that? Or to what degree do you think we cover these communities now more as less one-dimensional places?
I certainly would like to think that we've come a long way from the way we covered it 25 years ago,
yeah.
When I think probably, you know, that criticism had a lot of credence. I think it has less now.
You know, we have a number of young producers on the staff, and when we were talking about the story this morning, you know, those of us who've lived here for a long time knew about it. It wasn't familiar to the younger people, and it started getting me thinking about Boston population growth, more people here. A lot of the history is less familiar or unfamiliar, and this includes the Stewart case. I wonder if you think it's a beneficial thing to forget that, you know, or is there a time to remember and then a time to forget, or is there a loss in that kind of incident fading or becoming vanished in memory?
You know, it's funny. I've been thinking about this, too. I was in Mission Hill a few days ago, and I was walking around thinking that, you know, three-quarters of the population of Mission Hill probably doesn't have much of a memory of the Stewart case. And it's not all bad. In a way, it does allow you to move on from it. But we need, you know, I did say that there's never been a consensus about lessons learned, but certainly, you know, you don't want to just forget about it. It was too big an event in the city's history.
Absolutely. That's Adrian Walker. He's a columnist for the Boston Globe, and his column today is titled Charles Stewart's Case's Awful Legacy in Black and White. Adrian, thank you.
Thank you.
Sasha, I think the final thing I'd say about this is the city has come a long way since then, but as always, there's still work to do. Anyway, listeners, stay with us. Coming up, author Susan Minot tells the real story behind her novel, 30 Girls. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.